Okay, why am I the one behind the mixer board? Why isn't the audio...
Because that's where you chose to be.
I'm just going to say, the audio engineer needs to be behind the mixer board.
And the musician chose to be behind the equipment.
True. That's just what it is. Yeah. Hi, this is Technology Rocks with T-Dog and Justin. And wow. All right. So a lot of weird stuff going on. A lot of controversy on this YouTube thing. We actually have a video cast with the YouTube guys, so that'll be interesting coming up. So that'll be pretty cool. Apparently we've kicked a few rocks over and kicked a beehive or two.
Sometimes you gotta shake stuff up.
So some cool movie news actually, T-Bone, before we jump into it. Boondock Saints 3 is actually coming, is actually in production. So Norman Reedus and Sean Patrick Flannery,
yes,
are actually coming back. So that's pretty cool.
Very cool, very cool.
There was talk that our friend, well, not our friend, we don't know him, the Roadhouse scenario, it was leaving it open for a sequel, but Conor McGregor is actually going back into the fighting world, which he should very well. I think we all miss him there just because it kind of needs it. So that's happening. Of course, everybody and their chicken knows about the Jake Paul thing, Mike Tyson thing, or I should say, Jake Paul's funeral. Hopefully on that, even though we all know it's rigged, but you know what? Make that money, dude.
So it's a Super Bowl.
Yep. Happy Gilmore 2 actually was announced. Not okay. So that's actually a rumor. So but that started with, Barstool Sports. Sorry. It was actually interviewing, Shooter McGavin, the guy that plays Shooter McGavin in the movie. So he was actually interviewing that guy, and he had said that Adam Sandler had sent they send funny videos back and forth, Happy Gilmore related things, quips and things, and there was a hint toward
Christopher McDonald.
Yeah, so there was a hint that there could be actually a Happy Gilmore 2 in the works. Ghostbusters 2 climbing the charts, doing very well, still hasn't surpassed Dune, but doing very well. They've left that one open for a sequel. In fact, they've already green lit it, and Rittman Jr. I guess is already has plans for where he would take the franchise, so that's pretty cool stuff. Beetlejuice, I think you and I talked about Beetlejuice a little bit, the Beetlejuice 2 trailer, that one was released. The Bad Boys 4 trailer has actually been released. Actually, that one actually looks pretty darn good. So that actually looks really good. I wasn't a fan of Bad Boys 3. I like 2. 1 was just your typical crap 90s movie, and then part 2 to me was one of the few instances in cinema where the second one was better than the first one, for sure. But the third one kind of fell flat because they were trying to introduce too many new characters at one time, and that was a spinoff series type of thing, and then that just never caught traction. But Bad Boys 4, Neve Campbell is actually coming back to the Scream franchise after Scream 7 yep. seemed to be a flop without her, even though Jenna Ortega did a really good job in the movie. It wasn't a bad movie. It actually wasn't that bad. It just wasn't that good.
I mean, Neve is just the actress you expect to see in that particular series of movies.
Well, the reason why she didn't join on in the first place is she was holding out for more money. She just did not think she was getting paid enough for what she had done brought to the franchise.
Greed actually got her less money.
Greed got her no money, but then it got her another movie deal. So maybe holding
no money would be less money.
True. Very also true. Thank you, redundant, smart aleck, party of two. Yeah. So actually, Skeet Ulrich was interviewed about that movie because apparently they're starting to bring in a supernatural twist to it. And he weighed in on it. So if you weren't familiar with Skeet Ulrich, he was in the very first movie. And only in the very first movie.
Yeah, he was the guy that played Neve Campbell's character's boyfriend.
Correct. Yeah, no. And anyway, short story long, he said the reason why he enjoyed it, not bringing a supernatural twist into it, a.k.a. bringing him in as a ghost of some sort that it could affect other people. He said the reason why he enjoyed not doing that was because it felt plausible. The stories have all felt plausible up until this point, very much like a psycho thread or something like that. So a lot of cool news there. But yeah, she's back. There's actually been talk of, what is his name? He's the voice of Shaggy. He plays Shaggy in Scooby-Doo. Matthew Lillard. Yeah. So there was talk of bringing his character,
played serial killer and Hackers.
Yes. Yep. So there's talk of actually bringing him back for,
but he got stabbed to death in the first one.
No, he wasn't stabbed to death. There was a TV dropped on his face. But you didn't his theory is you didn't theoretically actually see him die, even though it's a TV falling on his face.
Really see a lot of people die in horror films. It's definitely dead.
It's a flipping TV. If you've ever lifted a tube TV and it falls on your face, you're dead. So, anyway, so that's your movie news coming into it. No, I still have not seen Ghostbusters Frozen Kingdom. Tony hasn't either. My review still stands about Roadhouse. If you're a fan of seeing Conor McGregor's butt, then go for it. The movies,
good. Don't need to see it.
I'm gonna raise my score a little bit. I think I was a little bit too harsh on it to begin with. You know, I gave it a 4, but I'm gonna keep it at all 7. That's what I'm gonna do. Is just keep it at a 7 out of 10. I have issues. 6 out of 10. I'm gonna keep it at 6 out of 10. I think 7's too high for that movie. Even though it's Conor McGregor's first acting debut, there is some really cool interviews with him between him and Jake Gyllenhaal, though, on YouTube, that's actually really, really cool, where you kind of get to see Conor McGregor being a human being for once, you know, and just he's very humble. He's not this cocky, bigger-than-life guy that you typically see him in when he's on UFC and things like that. And that was kind of neat. I thought the interviews were better than the movie. but I'm a Conor McGregor fan, so it's you gotta take that in there, because it's just foreign to see him in that that body of work. So what else you got? You got anything fun?
I think we were talking about earlier that baseball is back.
Oh yeah, baseball opening season starts tomorrow, so make sure America's pastime is back. So make sure you have your plan, whatever your streaming plan may or may not be. Fubo, we just got an advertisement from Fubo. No, we do not work for Fubo, but they were already talking about that opening day starts tomorrow. And if you're an Astros fan, you need to make sure you have that Space City network. Otherwise you're going to miss out on all the games, not all the games, but there will still be games televised, but just all of their games. So
paying for baseball, whether you're at the game or not, is coming.
Yes. Yeah. No, unfortunately paying for baseball, whether you're at the game or not, is indeed coming and going.
The NFL will be right behind it.
I don't know. There's still, NFL seems to have their crap together more than the MLB right now. The MLB is still butting heads, and it's an individual relationship with teams, and teams, I don't know, there may be certain teams that aren't going to be televised. I don't know. I do know the San Diego Padres were in breach of that last season, and actually the last half of their games were not televised because they got in a fight with that network. So that's going to be interesting as opening day comes to play, who worked out their deals and contracts. I do know that the MLB channel, which you also have to pay for, the MLB channel will be airing some of those games for franchises that could not afford to pay the sponsorships and all that stuff. Because you got to remember, these teams make almost 30% of their revenue off of those televised games. So it's just what it is. So yeah, baseball opening season is tomorrow, and then you've got I think that's it really in the entertainment news. We'll just kind of jump right in it. So the biggest topic on play that we're getting asked about as we've continued on to this home theater series, and we're going to have to do a multi-parter because we don't want to really put people to sleep on that particular subject, is should we be relying on room acoustics or room correction, or should you just correct the room? How do you weigh in on that, Tony?
Well, I come into this one thinking that both are beneficial, so not one or the other is more important, because with reflections in the room and all, the different acoustic foam and all that you would put on your wall is going to serve to have an effect on the way your room reacts, just as much as the time aligning of frequencies and all through room correction software.
Correct. Well, room correction software does a few things. One, the one thing that I dislike that it does the most is, in most cases, it flattens all your frequency curves to 80. It sets everything to 80 hertz. In fact, the second you tell it you have a subwoofer hooked up, it'll set everything to 80 hertz, and it'll put your sub around 120 hertz, meaning your speakers aren't doing, they're crippled, so to speak. They're not doing what they're supposed to do as far as frequency cutoff and whatnot, and so that needs to be addressed in a lot of situations when it comes to that. So I know Odyssey does that. I know if you don't go back into Odyssey and make those changes, I know, in fact, most of these people do that. Most of these room correction softwares will do that, mainly because it's trying to use a fake room and it's trying to bounce signals off the room. And if you ever experience that, that's exactly what it's doing. And in most cases, it's trying to get rid of what's called room decay, which is the room decay isn't actually sound. It's the decay of sound, just like what it sounds like. So if we were to walk in a bathroom together and you hear your voice bouncing up and down, I could tell that you're talking, but you may not be able to understand dialogue unless some of those frequencies are honed in on and corrected. Now, room correction does the best job that it can. However, it's not a silver bullet. It's not going to completely solve every problem that you may or may not have. There's been a big misconception about bass management. I know bass management is a huge topic. I know that as far as just focusing on bass management, trying to get rid of peaks and valleys and time alignment with multiple subwoofers, because a lot of these AV receivers have jumped into the multiple subwoofer territory. So I'm a huge fan of trying to correct the room more than I am relying on room correction. Room correction is a cool feature, but it's not what I would base my AV receiver choice off of.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that that's what you're basing your AVR choice off of. I'm just saying that the two between, like, the way that you sound treat your room by saying what we're saying by correcting the room, you know, that helps with reflection and stuff like that. But room correction, from my understanding, does more than just the frequencies and all that. It's also measuring distance to
time
help.
Alignment. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, time delay. Aligning frequencies. So, and also so that things hit speakers where they're supposed to and when they're supposed to.
In relation to the seating area. Yes, correct. Yeah, no. So, and it, what it's trying to do is it's trying to mimic the THX method. You know, if you know anything about the THX methodology, no, I'm not going to Batman origin story you here. If you'd like to know that, just message us and then we'll kind of go into that with you. But what the whole reason would why THX, here I go, origin story. The whole reason why the that methodology was created was trying to make every seat a good seat. That was what they were trying to do with that THX. So that's why when you go into most room corrections, let's stick to Odyssey. Most of our listeners have probably used some sort of Odyssey in some
it's
way,
one of the most common, especially because Denon and of Marantz. Marantz and,
yeah, Denon and Marantz. And I think there was a hot minute when Onkyo was actually using Odyssey as well. All three of the big guys were using it, and then Onkyo decided to move into a different realm called AQEQ. So they were doing something different. So, but what it's doing is it's typically measuring eight positions. So it's measuring eight positions in your room. If you choose to measure those positions, sometimes if you get bored, you can skip at four or five or whatever it's going to do. However many you can handle in that moment. So, what it's doing is, just like Tony said, it's setting speaker, individual speaker level. It's setting the distance between listener
it's
and
kind of
screen.
Like a time saver, because you could sit there and you could take a measuring tape and you can measure, you know, the distances of everything and all of that, and get the same result except for the frequency part of it. But as far as, like, you know, the measurement of how, like, far each speaker is and all that, you could do that by hand and all, and it would just take you a lot longer. The room correction software, it has a section of it that's going to save you a little bit of time on that, because through bouncing signals off the walls, it's going to get pretty accurate with those distances.
So we like to use it in the field as a guideline. You know, it's a hell of a place to get started.
It's
you
a
know,
template.
It gets your measurements right in most cases. Now, we have seen the new Sony ES line. They take it a step further. Like, when I say further, way further. You actually have to measure it has you input manually the measurement of the distance of where you're sitting from the screen. It actually has you put in the measurements of the width and the size of your screen. And they're using a different software. Sony's always used their own proprietary stuff, but right now they're calling this Reality 360, which is... it's pretty interesting because Sony is the only one in the arsenal that owns a movie studio. You know, if you think about it, they really are. They own a video game company and then they own a movie studio. So they really do know how to EQ this particular thing, and they make a really, really good product. Longest warranty in the as far as the way the chips fall down, they do carry the longest manufacturer warranty in comparison to their competitors. They do have pound for pound a good value, best bang for your buck as far as amplification. So if you go with the ES line, which on the ES line, you actually have to find an independent dealer to get the ES line. It's not something you can go get on Best Buy. I don't think you can even get it on Crutchfield. As a matter of fact, maybe Crutchfield, but definitely not Best Buy, because Best Buy didn't want to jump into the ES category. They wanted to focus on other things. But back into room correction, yes to all the things. Tony's dead on, dead accurate on all of that. But where I've seen what I would call the downfall of it is where it wants to cut off your speaker frequency based on your subwoofer, based on LFE channel, and that's kind of how it does it wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, you can go in and adjust that, and yeah, when it does that, sometimes you do have to trick it and have it think that speakers are a different size than what they actually are.
No, that's very true. I mean, In most cases, you are going to want your keep. You're going to wow English. You're going to want to keep
your words
speakers set on small. Now, setting your speakers on small does not mean that you're insulting your speakers. What that does mean is that you're not utilizing power from your AV receiver amplifier and setting your crossovers to a point of where they shouldn't be. Now, there's a flip side to that coin. It also keeps you from putting your speakers where they shouldn't be crossover-wise. And if you're not using something like REL 3D technology where you don't need the extra horsepower, 40 hertz in most cases is more than okay. It gets you a little bit of meat down at the low end. Most heavyweight speakers, ladies and gentlemen, most heavyweight speakers. I don't care if you're talking about Focal Sopra 3, Conta 2, Dyne Audio Contour, Martin Logan ESLs, Bowers & Wilkins 8 series, most of those speakers cut off at 33 hertz, okay? Meaning, you don't need more than that, and that's kind of a pliable number. I would venture to say they probably go 5 to 10% higher than that number. That's just more of a marketing, hey, it goes down to here thing, you know, if they're playing that particular frequency in that particular speaker. So you don't
number they'll be fudging, you know, yep, either higher or lower, you know, it's a ballpark number.
Right. And when you're keeping your speakers on large, that's utilizing more power from your AV receiver to push those particular types of speakers in a certain way.
Which that's gonna make kind your AVR work a little bit harder. And also it's going to heat up a lot more and also, but
it all depends on where your level set too. That's what I was getting to. Now, just because you change your frequency doesn't mean it's going to shove more power. It just means it's going to play more frequency, send more frequency to that particular speaker. If you are one of those that just wants to put your speakers on large because somebody said on a forum, if you watch Good Morning Vietnam, you won't get that joke. But if somebody said on a forum, well, this thing will do 20 hertz or this thing will do 19 hertz, you're going to find out really flipping quick if that speaker will indeed do that, because it'll start piffling at you and making all kinds of nasty noises.
Crackling and popping.
And then you will also find out if your crossover is not set up correctly, because that stuff will start doing weird things too. So just
if your speaker can't handle it, it will very quickly let you know that it can't.
That's why if you set it on small, it typically will let you go to frequencies between 30 and 40, which is more than enough for most tower speakers. And certainly more than enough for in-wall speakers, unless you're running something different like a Focal Utopia that has built-in crossovers, but then you would just set those to large. So,
and then there's also always a situation of if you're running rails with the high-pass filter, and then you're running your front speakers at full range.
Yeah. I am so excited to talk about REL 3D. I think REL 3D is the coolest freaking effect that I've ever seen done.
I'm jumping a little ahead on
but please do. Yeah, no, just because to me you have to stop think. So here's the thing. REL gets pooped on a lot because I'm going to say this. I'm going on record to say it. Here we go. Insert soapbox. Here, where's my ladder, T-Bone?
Yeah, because your soapbox is way up there.
REL does not lie about their amplifier specifications. They just don't do it. And there's a time and the place for REL. There's a time and the place for REL to be used. But if you're talking about REL 3D, you have to stop picturing this box as a subwoofer. You have to start picturing this box as a driver for your speakers.
Yeah, it's an extension of your speaker. It's like adding another speaker to your tower, where normally people are like, oh, I'm adding a subwoofer so that I can get, you know, the boom for the explosions and all that.
But not even really the boom. How would you describe it?
Well, you have...
It's like that chest thump, you know? It's like the...
Well, bass is more than just what people think of when they think of it as like the explosions and the rumble and stuff like that. There's also the way that frequencies interact with each other to give you the sounds that you even hear in your mid-range and your even some of your mid-range sounds and all, because with the way that those
anything
low
below
end frequency,
40.
Yeah, yeah, with the way with some of those mid-range and low-end frequencies interact together, give you the sound that you're expecting to hear.
So what you do is you take the high-pass technology from REL. So they're now REL subwoofers that do not have what they call their high-pass connection. That's literally hooked up line level. You can act their HT series actually perform in this same way. The problem with trying to there's not really a problem. The trick with trying to use an HT series in that particular way is you have to have an AV receiver with pre-outs. That's the only way to be able to do it with an HT series. If you do not have pre-outs, an HT series will not work to perform this way.
Yeah.
So you've got to use
because,
it on the pre-out.
Because if it doesn't have the pre-outs on it, then because of the type of outputs that particular series has, you just wouldn't be able to connect it that way.
So we always encourage, especially on the center channel, your center channel is the hardest working speaker in your home cinema, and it's also the most neglected speaker in your home cinema. Now, for those of you that are worried about the large and they're worried about the, you know, putting them on small and things like that, there is a button on 99.999999% of your AV receivers called direct. So if you're listening to two channel mode, you can hit that direct button and it will bypass all internal frequency and just you'll hear your speakers the way they were intended to be heard without room correction. If you're worried about cutting off that frequency at that
point. Well, in the way that you think they're intended to be heard.
True. Think. It's more of a think than that. But the thing about the high pass technology is, and we're kind of getting away from the room acoustics and correcting the room, but it's just such a cool technology that we just, pretty much every system that comes out of this building that's home cinema related has, we're utilizing REL 3D. You just, especially on the center channel, maybe not on front, left, and right, but just on the center channel in a lot of cases. And here's the thing, when that movie is mixed in the lab for cinema, all of those channels, including atmospheric, have large information coming to them, meaning subsonic frequency, even including your center channel. So if you're cutting everything off at 80 hertz and just setting your subwoofer to 120, then you're missing out on a lot of really cool information. I'm talking about when somebody gets too close to a microphone, then you hear bass. If somebody strums the guitar the wrong way, you hear bass. There's so many ways that bass is created in just sound in general, and that information is in your system and you are not utilizing or you're not using it at all because you've just cut everything off at LFE to run LFE. So so what I would tell you to do, so Justin, what do? Do we set our subs at high pass or do we set our subs at LFE? I would say you do both. And that's because you want to do both.
It depends on what subwoofers you're using and
yeah.
Because the setups are going to be different depending upon what equipment you're using.
Some of my favorite setups, I mix two types of brands with subwoofers. Typically, I'll use REL Acoustic and then I'll use JL Audio. You know, I love JL Audio. JL Audio has a time and a place. And if you just want a mud stomping T-Rex that you feel in your unborn children, then jail is that animal. You know, if you want something that's as nimble and speedy as a Porsche 911 Turbo going around a corner, but looks like it's the size of a dump truck, then REL is your animal, you know. And REL is all, REL subwoofers have always been known for musicality more than cinema. They didn't realize that cinema was just a big category until they were like, oh, okay, you want us to do that? Well, we can do that, you know. And that's just kind of why they jumped into the HT model. But their HT models, the reason why they don't have to have 1500 watts is because their drivers are carbon. They're made, they're lightweight, they're easy to push, they're efficient to push, which is why they can keep up with hooking them up to a high pass channel such as a center channel or the front left and right or surrounds, because that driver will move almost as fast, or if not as fast, as your normal speaker driver will. So it's just really, really, really cool technology where, again, but the reason why you want, still want to have LFE hooked or at least one LFE channel hooked up is because, for instance, I'm going to pull a movie out of the air, Tron Legacy. Tron Legacy with the Daft Punk DJ scene.
Yeah, and Daft Punk uses a lot of low-end frequencies, not necessarily bass, but a lot of low-end frequencies.
But there's hardly any full-range frequency in that movie. It's all LFE. It was all pushed to LFE. So that's why you don't want to completely cut off LFE. LFE is still important, but again, if you really want to wake up your cinema, for those of you that have home cinemas and you're wondering what else can I do to wake this thing up, or, you know, I feel like I've bought everything, or I feel like, you know, I need to have something new. Once you get that itch, REL 3D is a really cool product to look at in regard to that, because, you know, and don't try this with your normal subwoofer. Do not try to use just any subwoofer and hook it up to your pre-out of your AV receiver, because you'll probably see it fly across the room because most subs can't keep up with it. That's why REL makes lightweight drivers. That's why they make efficient speakers. That's why they don't need a whole lot of power to push them, because there's just no point. There's no point in pushing it harder than it needs to go. So, but...
Well, the lighter it is, the less power it requires to push it, and the more efficiently the speaker runs.
Yeah, so the biggest thing that Tony and I get asked about the most is, I want to soundproof my room. And so Tony and I kind of look at that person.
As soon as you say soundproofing, I want to do just a quick, you know, education on that. Not meant to make anybody feel like, you know, they're stupid or anything like that. But soundproofing has to be done when you actually build the room. It's actually with spacing of studs and all of that in the walls. It's floating the floor, you know.
Decoupling is what it is.
And when you float the floor, actually putting sand in that room. There's a lot to it, you know, because they do this in recording studios. What you want to do is what's actually called sound dampening. And that's where you're trying to gain control over the reflections in the room.
Yeah, no. So typically course correct really quick when somebody says the word soundproofing. For one, unless you're in a recording studio with a massive budget, soundproofing is virtually impossible unless the room was thoroughly planned, just like Tony had said. And in most cases, what we like to course correct and call it room isolation, not soundproofing, because to me, soundproofing kind of sets a false precedence, doesn't it, Tony? I mean,
soundproofing also immediately
you get this in your head that it's going to be silent, right?
Well, also with my background, immediately when somebody says soundproofing, I think I'm going to walk into a room that there is no reverberation at all.
Right.
You know, literally any reverberation that you hear has all been synthetically added to the audio at that point.
Yeah, and as a musician, I've been in several rooms like that, and I'll tell you this, it takes somebody like Tony to pipe it back through my headphones, because I'll sing horribly.
If you were to take your headphones off in the recording booth, you'd be like, why do I sound like that?
Well, it's not even that. It's you feel like what happens is you end up straining your voice because you're pushing your voice to try to create the what you get in the shower. You know what I mean?
In that room, you're never going to get it because it's designed to suck all of that reverberation away.
You can't. The reason why is because you can't remove that from a recording.
That's where people like me want to have that control.
Well, that too, but it's you can't remove that from a recording. You know, and
yeah, if reverberation is there, you can't take it away.
No, you can do what's called a noise gate and remove sound from it. But even then, you're cutting off words and things are.
Yeah,
gonna
I mean, it's not gonna take it away. I mean, it can, you know, cut in between words and stuff like that. But it's not going to take away the reverberation that is in the audio or vocals that's just naturally there. It's still not going to take that away.
So soundproofing again doesn't exist in most cases. I mean, it exists, but it doesn't exist.
If you plan it in the building of your home. If you build a home, you can do, and there's different levels of soundproofing. You know, there's complete like dead room, and then you can soundproof where there's still some reverberation and all of that. But you know, it depends on like how dead you want your room.
So
a good example is like if you want to see what soundproofing will do, be talking to somebody in your bedroom. And then walk into your closet and continue talking and listen to how your voice changes. And that's because the reverberation is being absorbed by the clothes and all in your closet.
And that same effect can be created in or a problematic in your home cinema. So when you go to an audio store, like if you come here, this is a very dead building. You know, when you walk in the room and you clap your hands, there's not a lot of reverberation echo in these rooms, except with exception of maybe the small theater room, just because it's a 12 by 12 room. But in most cases, if you're standing out in the lobby, this is a very dead lobby, you know, for an open lobby like it is. And a speaker will sound drastically different in a room that's deadened and that has acoustics in the right spots than it will in your home with zero acoustic treatments whatsoever.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the main thing we get called on is, Justin, I can't hear dialogue. I can't understand dialogue. So Tony, if I'm in a room and I can't understand dialogue, what's my issue with acoustics?
Typically, the acoustics, what's happening is you've got a lot of low end frequencies that are in your room that are masking your high end frequencies. And the first thing that typically I'll usually do to try and correct something like that is I'll go to my settings in my audio video receiver and start bringing up the volume of the center channel, which is where most of the dialogue in your cinema recordings lives.
Right. No, and when I say the center channel is the most neglected speaker but the hardest working speaker, think about this for a minute. Let's say clips, for instance. So I'm going to get these two giant RF8 towers with 3 8-inch drivers, but then, oh yeah, I got to get a center channel and I've got 2 6.5-inch drivers. Well, that poor little guy is screaming at the top of his lungs just to keep up with what your left and right channels are doing. So that's what I'm saying is, if you can't hear your dialogue, it's probably getting blown out by the other channels in most
cases.
Size
does matter.
Size does matter, for one. But sometimes the other thing that can be caused to not hear dialogue is if I have a very live room, if I have things that are 20,000 kilohertz and above.
Yes, high-end frequencies also can mask the same way.
The cathedral effect, like the church building.
Yeah,
effect.
And also, you know, like say you've got, you know, music that's got a lot of high-end brassy type of sounds in it and all that. You know, that's going to mask over your voices also. Just think about when you're watching TV and you're like, you're watching your show and everything's like great and all of that. And then it gets to like a really intense like chasing or something like that. And you're like, oh, I can hear all of the squealing tires and the slamming of the cars together and all that. But I can't hear a word that the people in these cars are saying to each other.
So I've been, this is where the smart aleck in me takes over, because there was one time I was invited to a client's house to look at this very problem. And I think we were watching Jurassic Park, and it was a scene in Jurassic Park where there's dinosaurs and everything else going on. And there's two people talking on the screen. He's like, yeah, you see that? I can't hear him. And I was like, but there's a flipping brontosaurus there. You're not going to hear him. You know, there's a stampede of triceratops.
Realistically, you would have a problem hearing that. You know, realistically, so, but that's where in the cinema world we get to fix all of that.
And then I'm fired. And yeah, no. And then they look at me like I'm an alien, because, again, I see humor. I see sarcasm and humor in everything that we talk about. So, but when I look at a situation like that, I'm like, but you really wouldn't hear, you know. There's the other one was the bomber movie where they're all on the plane. The
one where he's like, because you scare off all the broads.
Yeah, that one.
I can't remember the name of that.
Yeah.
But.
Anyway, so but they're bombing the bejeebers, dropping bombs everywhere and all that stuff, and they eventually get shot out of the sky, and that's where the
realistically
movie
those guys would have been screaming at each other.
Exactly. You're not going to hear a whisper on a bomber air jet, but no. So anyway, however,
especially one that was as open as those were.
Room acoustics affect. Those anomalies affect the way your speakers sound. There's not an amount of room correction on the planet that's going to course correct a horrible room.
Well, that's where we come into my point that I was trying to make earlier with the acoustic treatments that you would put on the wall then with diffusers and acoustic foam. Which there's everything from like the egg crate style foam and the jagged foam and all that to the more artistic stuff that looks pretty and all like Art Novian and Prime Acoustics and stuff like that. You know, you can go a more economic route and it doesn't look as pretty, but it does the job. Or you can go the more you know, carefree, you know, just, hey, you know, I just need to sound right. I don't, but look pretty, and I don't care what it costs.
There was a YouTube video about this where a guy did some acoustic testing on different types of panels, and he found that it was like beach towels and pillows. He
made them out of,
yeah, egg crate foam and beach towels were actually really good acoustic
panels.
Actual
egg crates.
Yeah, or egg crates as well. But that's the thing is if you go the Amazon route, guys, it's not the same thing. It's really not.
You really got to look at the density of it.
It's like
that's one thing you want to check with when you if you do go on to Amazon, which, you know, sometimes we got to be more economical with how we do things.
Right.
You know, just depending upon our board and budgets. So if you do go that way, just look at the brand that is the more inexpensive one and check and see if you can find like a web page for them or something like that that'll give you some information on the density of that foam, because the density is what is a big help in absorbing those reflections that we're trying to get rid of so that we have the better sound in our room.
So the way to check that out is just like the way you pick out carpet. If you take a carpet, like if you're picking out carpet with your spouse, then take that carpet and fold it, bend it in half. And if you can see light pinholes and light through it, then it's not good carpet. If you can't, if it's dense when you fold it and you can't see light through it, then that's going to be a better carpet. So acoustic material works the same way.
Now, if you are in a situation like what I was saying, though, and you are going to Amazon, if you can check to see if something says like high density or something like that, that's something you want to look for when you're trying to find foam.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, because you can get the stuff that's like the same thing you would put on your bed to make it more comfortable for your back, but it's not going to absorb as much of the frequencies that you're trying, or not frequencies, wrong word, reflections that you're trying to get rid of.
Probably not going to pass the Y factor either. So,
kind of like my tire.
You start hanging Walmart. You start hanging Walmart egg crate what mattress pads on the walls. You're proud. Our job is to keep us alive and you together. So. So you start hanging that stuff on the wall, you're probably going to get the whole lot of different noise than reflections that you're going to have to worry about. So
now you bring somebody in and like, man, I can make that stuff look a little nicer. But
right. Yeah. But there's a lot of good companies out there. Oralux would probably be the top tier as far as what's used in the, as the industry standard in a recording studio. And then but it is industrial looking. It's just, it's made to look.
And you know, I've done things where like, hey, it's like, hey, this is what I got to use. But hey, I know you're trying to make this room look cool. Let's find some cool frames to put around that foam to make it look nicer hanging on the wall, you know, but it serves a purpose.
The other things that you can do are plush pillows, furniture, draperies,
carpet,
floor rugs on the carpet, things like that. It's the time to
shag carpet.
Talk to your interior. No.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. It's the time to.
I said shag carpet, not shagging carpet.
So it's the time to. It's the time to invite your interior designer, and you may have to spend some money, but the more plush things you can put in that cinema, the better it will sound, because it's going to absorb those reflections and high frequencies that you're trying to get rid of.
Lots of squishmallows.
You're trying to get rid of the bathroom effect, you know, the shower effect. Everybody sounds good in the shower, right? Well,
the reason everybody sounds good in the shower is because of the natural reverb of your voice bouncing off the glass and the tile and the floor and yeah. Right.
Yeah, no, exactly. So room acoustic, room correction, my theory, my way in and my vote is to try correcting the room before relying on a room correction software. You know, it's room correction softwares help, but they don't necessarily correct the room, especially if you're trying to get the most out of your cinema. That's where I went in, way in, T.
Right. And with that, I'm not disagreeing with that. Just when you start correcting the room, as you say, there's going to be a point at which you've only done so much before you have to introduce your theater sound into it to actually, like, set the distances of your speakers and
absolutely
all that.
No, then. You always want to go recalibrate after this is done, for sure. Absolutely, because
even before you actually run initial sound, just simply talking and clapping your hands, because I had the pleasure of designing a sound system for a chapel that they didn't think of in the beginning that they were going to need microphones and music to be played during their ceremonies. And literally, when you clapped your hands in this building, you could count using the 1-1000, 2-1000, using that method, and you got 10 seconds of echo in that room.
There's
so
no
once
way
you got
to understand that.
So
yeah.
Once you got a room full of people that are talking,
babies
and
crying,
all that, and just everything, yeah. You know, to fix that room, the first thing I had to do before I could even introduce a microphone into it, because it was going to feedback immediately, is I had to, with my clap test, you know, clapping my hands and testing that echo, putting foam up and all until it got to a tolerable level, and then you had to bring in the microphones and see how much more you had to do. And then, you know, play music and see how everything, you know, interacts and plays with each other. And the same thing is going to happen in your theater rooms. Is you're going to test without actual sound, just, you know, seeing what kind of natural echo you have just with, you know, clapping your hands, whistling, and talking. And then from there, you're going to slowly start introducing sound and then movies until you're like, okay, now it sounds like it's supposed to.
Well, we also see this a lot in living room situations, not necessarily just home cinema. And with typically a living room application, it's usually
like tile floors. Yep,
you have something that's a sound. It's typically a soundbar scenario or small satellite speakers with tile floors and really high ceilings. And really, you know, smaller cathedral-like effect. Yeah. And, you know, we get called out and just, I can't understand TV dialogue. And then we got to turn it up and then everything else gets up louder, you know. And yeah, acoustics is the only thing that's going to fix that. You know, even Room Perfect, you know, using something called Room Perfect or not Room Perfect, but True Play Sonos, like on a Sonos soundbar room correction. That particular electronic device EQing can only do so much, but it's not going to physically correct your room. And I think that's the big misconception. And if you use things like that to physically correct your room, like ARC or Dirac, then you will find that your sound is going to be significantly squished to try to get rid of those room reflections.
Yeah, because it's really just EQ tricks trying to change how the audio reacts to the room.
Right.
And so it's going to, through those EQ tricks, that they're not going to show you that curve except for unless you go through like Dirac. If you're going through Odyssey, you don't get to see any of that. It just does it, and then it is what it is. I know. Even with somebody like myself or Justin that's very seasoned in doing this stuff, you know, there's still only so much we can do with that, where with, you know, Dirac, we can get a lot deeper into the curves and all of that. But once again, you know, the less you have to do on that, the better.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, the only processors that I've seen that have gone, I would say, into creepy territory as far as what they can do would be Trinov. Like a Trinov can detect if the speaker is 3 feet in the wrong direction. You know, oh, this one's 3 feet to the left and it needs to be pulled back and it needs to go down 2 feet, and where it can somehow, through their wizardry, it can course correct some of those things. Sony is another one. Sony has a really cool technology for all in-ceiling speaker rooms, to where you can put a Sony in that category and tell it that it's an in-ceiling center channel, or if the center channel, if it's the adverse effect where the center channel is too low, like meaning it's firing at your knees, as most are sitting on entertainment centers, because most entertainment centers are too low, you can actually somehow physically raise that form wave to where it sounds as if you move the speaker up. So it's very interesting what some of these companies are doing. But yeah, no, if you're having an issue trying to hear dialogue, if you're having an issue trying to, you know, if your surrounds are louder than what you're watching the movie for, you may not necessarily have a room problem, but I would definitely have it checked out. It could be that it's just calibrated poorly. It could be that you just need a calibration.
Yeah, you just need somebody to come in and adjust the volumes of your Atmos, your side surrounds, your rear speakers, so that they're not overpowering your center channel, but also make sure that your center channel isn't just too low.
Yeah.
As far as power wise, in your situation,
and just
power
make and volume it, wise. And make sure it's not undersized. You know, if you're running 8-inch drivers in your tower, then don't run 5-inch drivers in your center channel. You know, you're 80% of what you're hearing out of your movie is dialogue. You know, it's coming out of your center channel, unless you're watching silent movies. But, you know,
the rest of your surround speakers, you know, your left, center, right, you know, are, in my opinion, the most important. But then, you know, the other speakers, your side surrounds, your rear speakers, your Atmos speakers, those right there can be a smaller speaker because they're more designed to catch all of those little things, you know, like cars passing by, raindrops, bullets whizzing
by, dogs barking,
stuff like that. It's all the little things, but your main stuff, even usually your music until either your opening or ending credits, you know, the music in the movie itself is usually going to be coming from your left and right and a little bit in the center.
If you really want to hear this effect for yourself in your own room, and there's a really good movie for this. Unbroken was the name of that movie, by the way. It just popped in my head. But it's a Transformers movie. There's a the third one, the one where Mark Wahlberg came on board. I think it was Rise of the Fallen, possibly. Tony will look it up.
Yeah, give me just a moment.
But in
that
the
up.
First 5 minutes of this movie, Mark Wahlberg meets a guy outside, and he pulls up in his car, and you're hearing street noises and everything around you, and it's a very lively scene where they're talking about, man, I hope you brought money, and there's just a little bit of dialogue between the two. As they walk into the movie theater, they're actually in a smaller room, almost the size of a bedroom, and they're digging through old projectors and old home or old.
You're talking about Dark of the Moon?
No, it's the third one. The first one Mark Wahlberg was in. But they're walking in this smaller room, and it's a very compressed, squished sound, as if they were standing in an old room full of junk. And then about minute three into this movie, they're in a giant cinema, and you're hearing those voice reflections reflect all over the ceiling speakers and on your surrounds and everything else.
So Age of Extinction, that would have been the fourth one, actually.
Oh, is it the fourth one? Yeah. I didn't know Shia LaBeouf was in more than I thought he was only in two. But it's okay. It doesn't matter.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So at the very beginning of this movie, they're walking into that scenario, and you will hear the atmospheric reflection. You'll hear what it sounds like in a small room. You'll hear what it sounds like to be on a street corner if your system is set up properly. You know, if you check this movie out, it's the first.
You're talking about the scene with the Dinobots and, like, the magnet is pulling everything up.
That's another scene. That's the same movie, though. It's that movie. Yeah, so it may be Age of Extinction. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that.
That was the one where the Dinobots were introduced.
It is that movie, 100%. So in the first 5 minutes of that movie, you'll hear all the things you're supposed to hear if your room is set up correctly. If it's not set up correctly, everything will sound too lively. Everything will sound like a hallway, you know. And if you do have a reflection problem, you won't hear the compression of the small room, and you won't hear the compression of the street or the street corner that they're on at the very beginning of the movie. And everything will sound like the cathedral effect of the cinema. So anyway, there's a lot of nitty gritty to get into it, but, you know, we're coming up on our hour, so we don't want to put everybody to sleep on it. But this was a good discussion. You know, it's a very controversial topic online because
some of it can be a little bit boring. So, you know, hopefully we didn't put anybody to sleep on it, because some of it is a little technical. But the deeper we get into cinema stuff, the more some of it's not going to be, you know, as fun conversations, and it's going to be more technical conversations.
Well, right. You know, we can't, it's fun. Again, we've asked for, you know, people this is usually a topic for people that are either looking to do something in their cinema or they may think they have a problem in their cinema or living room and they're trying to achieve that problem. You know, the next thing that we would discuss is how to get rattles out of the room. You know, the most annoying thing in a home cinema is rattles, you know, from subsonic frequency and things like that. And so there are tips and tricks we can go into with that as we progress down this home theater series. I really didn't want to do a home theater series, but I figured there's so much information to talk about in this series that it's just really hard to cover, and you've got so many questions that are coming in and a lot of stuff to go to cross. So
yeah, I thoroughly expect a lot of questions to come in from what we're saying today, and you know, if somebody finds out some better information than some of the things that I might have said today, you know, I welcome people to, you know, bring me that information.
Yeah, no, most theater issues that we get are in the 20,000 hertz category and above. It's reflection. It's I can't hear this clear. But a lot of the dialogue problems that most people have are because their system is calibrated poorly. They've got the front left and right channels too hot. They got the surround channels too hot because they wanted to hear them. And now all of
or
the-
let's go back to the soundbar episode. Where you're trying to use a soundbar for left, center, right, and it, you can try to make it do that all you want, but unless it's set up where you've actually got three separate sets of input jacks on that, you're probably not going to be able to
It's condensed soup. The other issue that you have is your subs are too hot, and it's blowing the high frequency out of the way, because think about it. It's a physical sound wave. You know, it's physically more powerful than a high frequency sound wave. So anyway, I know we're going to get a lot of flack on this one, because this is one of those, the forum warrior, keyboard warriors, oh, well, such and such and so and so, or well, this guy said this and this guy said that. I'm saying this, so this is what we're saying.
And I can quote books all day, but my real world experience is going to overpower anything those books tell me.
Well, you know, as Elon Musk said, there are a lot of idiots that have have masters
that have master's degrees. Exactly.
So anyway, I think that's a wrap. Local news, Comic Palooza 20. You're going to remember this by the time we're done with this. 24th, 25th, 26th.
I'm hoping to see a lot of our listeners at
hopefully
it.
Yeah. No, Memorial Day weekend, still TBD on Paint and Sip, and TBD on Wine and Vinyl, to be continued on the Wine and Vinyl. And then
I think with how just how everything's been this month and getting prepared for Comic Palooza,
I just don't know if
either one of those two events is going to make it into next month. You know, there's also a lot of other really big events that would work against us.
Right. So yeah, we'll just have to go along with it and just check it out. If you're not busy tomorrow, Motive Fitness is having their 11-year anniversary party on Saturday at 6 PM. That's 4747 Research Forest Drive. Yes, that's because this is Friday's cast. So the Saturday,
I'm sorry, I lost a day.
Shh, they don't know that.
all the days run together.
Saturday, that's Saturday, this coming Saturday, and that is at 6 p.m., Motive Fitness. G and her crew will be there with photo booths and all kinds of fun stuff, and I think they're giving out giving away things for people that have done 30 workouts in this particular month, all month long. So there's an award for that. There's a drawing for that. So lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of cool stuff. If you want to check that out, they'd probably love to see you, to wish them a happy 11-year anniversary. So I think that's it. I don't got anything else unless you do, T-Dog.
No, I think we've actually given everybody a lot to digest on this one.
Fire hydrant.
And I think it's going to take people probably, you know, more than one listen to this before they can even formulate all of the questions that they're going to
have. Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, this is the more technical we get with this, the harder it is to make it fun. So, and that's what we're trying to do is make it fun, but a lot of this stuff is not fun. And if you're not interested, it's not interesting. So, with that being said, looking forward to, I'm sorry, Michael, you got to get a shorter YouTube channel name, man. That's just like, it's Michael, the Home Theater Adventures, Hi-Fi Ventures for Audiophiles.
No, Adventures Through Hi-Fi, I thought.
Yeah, we got to get an abbreviation for that. Otherwise, I'm just going to say Michael's YouTube thing. So, I did do something, sorry, that is interesting. I actually started a Facebook page for Technology Rocks. So it's not published yet, but I am. I just wanted to secure the name in case we explode off the stratosphere and we can't get a Facebook page name because that's confusing. So I do have a Facebook page for Technology Rocks. So you will be able to put questions online and comments online and all the things. So that'll be cool. All right. So that's a cast. I'm Justin.
And I'm Tony.
And this is your Technology Rocks podcast.
Rocks.
Last word.
Last word.
I give up.
Still got the last word.